Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Since April is Alzheimer's Awareness Month, Amy and I will be discussing their latest edition, Living with Alzheimer's and Other Dementias, 101 Stories of Caregiving, Coping, and Compassion. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm fine, Johnny. Thanks for having me back. If you hear any barking, it's my daughter's dog who I'm babysitting.
No problem at all. We are having a conversation in the kitchen, so to speak.
Right now I'm being stared down by a pug.
Wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you on the air with me. Statistically, at least 44 million people worldwide are living with Alzheimer's or other dementias. In 2014, Alzheimer's disease is the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S. It is my understanding that all royalties from the book will go to the Alzheimer's Association, the world's leading voluntary health organization in Alzheimer's care, support, and research. So thank you very much for your enormous contribution.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I really admire the Alzheimer's Association. They do tremendous work, not only with patients and caregivers in the Alzheimer's community, but also they work with patients and caregivers dealing with all the different kinds of dementias, because sometimes you don't even know which kind of dementia a patient has. And you don't really have to know. You just have to know what it is that you're supposed to do. So whether it's Alzheimer's or Lewy body dementia or vascular dementia or one of the other kinds of dementia, you're really on the same journey. It really should be one big community. And that's why the Alzheimer's Association supports everyone in that position.
Very interesting. How did the partnership between Chicken Soup and the Alzheimer's Association come about?
Well, it was a classic Chicken Soup for the Soul story because, as you know, all of the titles for our books really come out of my head. And 14 months ago, I was at a book industry conference, and they were giving some of the proceeds from the conference to the Connecticut Alzheimer's Association chapter. And I was listening to a woman speak about her mom who died from Lewy body dementia, and I thought, we have to do a book on this topic because we get so many stories from people who have Alzheimer's or other dementias or who are caring for someone. And I thought, we really should do a book just on this topic because our format of having 101 different stories from, you know, 101 different people is such a wonderful way of sharing tips, best practices, emotional support. And so I said, let's make an Alzheimer's book, and I asked the Alzheimer's Association if they wanted to do it with us. And we did it together. One of the editors on the book works at the Alzheimer's Association. We have an introduction to the book from Angela Geiger, who's one of the top people in the association. And I was really happy to work with them. Not only were they really good, but also it meant that I could be assured that everything that we said in the book was medically correct, represented best practices, most current knowledge. And then we filled the book with tips from the Alzheimer's Association's website, which is alz.org. And so at the beginning of each chapter, we have a tip from a piece of their website, and we say what piece of their website it's from so that people can go online and explore that website because they have so many resources. I was really impressed. They have support groups in every state. They do all kinds of fundraising, both to find a cure and to raise the funds to provide people with support groups and daycare and art programs and all these other good things for the Alzheimer's community. So I'm really pleased that we made a fabulous book and that it's supporting this wonderful organization.
That's fascinating. One of the things that I gather from this book is the fact that I really enjoyed reading it because this occurs right now in the present moment. A lot of times when we talk about stories, they usually happen in the past, but this is real life, real situation that's happening right now. And I believe this book can help people from all different facets of life in the sense of not only the people that are involved with Alzheimer's, whether they're caring for one or currently experiencing the disease themselves, but also I think to the general public, what I like about it is the information that it gave from a standpoint of making us better understand that Alzheimer's is definitely not you get old, you get Alzheimer's. It is actually a disease.
Yeah, and there used to be a stigma associated with it. And one of the things that Angela Geiger talked about in her introduction to the book is that it's a new world now for the Alzheimer's community because there is no more stigma.
Mm-hmm.
Patients who have been diagnosed proudly stand up and say, I am living with Alzheimer's. I have it. And they go out and they do public speaking. They write. We had a number of them write stories for the book. The caregivers talk about it openly. And it is true that it's a wonderful thing for the general population to understand because you're probably running into people in the early stages of Alzheimer's or other dementias every day. And I think by reading the book and understanding that this is an invisible disease, you don't see it in people. You would see it if somebody had a limp, or had a cast on something.
Right.
You don't see it when they have Alzheimer's or other dementias. And I was in the grocery store the other day, and I was behind an older woman, and she was having so much trouble paying. And I thought to myself, I think in the old days, I might have sighed a little bit. I might have rolled my eyes because I had to stand there for a long time with my ice cream melting.
Right.
And I thought to myself, I'm just standing here patiently looking at her and thinking, she probably has something. Alzheimer's or a traumatic brain injury or a dementia or something. So I'm just going to stand here and not let it bother me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the book was eye-opening for me because it has made me so much more aware of the millions of people out there who are suffering from this invisible disease.
So true. When I read the book, the thing that got to me personally, someone who have not really encountered someone who is currently suffering from Alzheimer's, but what you just said just now makes a whole lot of sense because sometimes we tend to consciously, subconsciously self-centered, but you brought up a very interesting example when you're in the waiting line at the cashier to check out and then you see someone fumbling and you think, oh, come on now, I mean, let's get with it and so forth. Now it has a different meaning for me and I hope for those who are listening because maybe that person is experiencing some sort of dementia that we are not aware of. Just because they are able to walk, drive, and so forth, that does not necessarily mean that they don't have something of this nature within them.
They could be beautiful, beautifully mm-hmm. dressed, standing with erect posture, playing tennis.
Right.
They could still be suffering from Alzheimer's because it's a very slow disease. All of these dementias are very slow. I mean, you could go 20 years with them, which is another interesting thing about our Chicken Soup for the Soul book about Alzheimer's. It will really last a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who picks it up and brings it into their home, they may be referring to it for the next 15 or 20 years as their loved one goes down, you know, the Alzheimer's
mm-hmm.
path.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very long journey with a lot of different components to it. Things really change over time. But we designed the book so that it went right from diagnosis to the end stage and covers everything in between in great depth and with a lot of real understanding. The people who wrote the stories for the book were so unselfish. We had at least 10 people with Alzheimer's who wrote stories for us about what it feels like. And then we had their caregivers writing stories and sharing things like the guilt they felt over putting someone in a home. You know, their last conversation with their mother.
Yeah.
All these really personal thoughts, which I don't know how we do this, but somehow Chicken Soup for the Soul is often a person's first confidant. You know, they'll write a story for us about the guilt they felt putting their mother in a home, and then they'll tell us this is the first time they've expressed these feelings out loud or on paper. So we get it first, and then we share it with hundreds of thousands of readers.
Mm-hmm.
And I so much appreciate the people who write the stories for us who do that kind of sharing, because they turn our book into a portable support group. You really do get the level of sharing that you would get in a well-run support group.
Mm-hmm. So true. One of the things that I initially experienced is like, wow, do I really want to read this book? I don't know how to take this book in the sense that, is it going to be a sad book, or is it going to be something about that I can learn from? What is your intent of putting this book together?
I really wanted to give people the most up-to-date information and at the same time hold their hands, you know, mm-hmm. give them that emotional support that Chicken Soup for the Soul is famous for. We're a company and we want to make profits, but we also have a mission. And we have this incredible formula of collecting stories from all these different people, curating them, you know, taking thousands of submissions and boiling them down to just the 101 final stories that go in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that mission allows us to do really good things, like making this book about living with Alzheimer's. So I want people to come away from reading the book with a new compassion and understanding for those who are suffering from Alzheimer's and those who are caring for people mm-hmm. with Alzheimer's and other dementias. And I want to provide support to the caregivers and tell them that the feelings that they're having are not wrong. I mean, a lot of people struggle with, when do I take the car away? When mm-hmm. do I bring in a home health care aide? When do I move my loved one into a memory care facility or a nursing home?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the book addresses those things and will really help somebody, because sometimes you don't know who to talk to, or you're afraid to voice your concerns to someone who knows you well. You're afraid to say, my mother is driving me crazy, or
yeah.
I feel incredibly guilty that I put my father in the nursing home. And this book will help with all of those secret questions. And actually, one of the things that I really found interesting was how supportive the Alzheimer's Association is, and they're the professionals,
mm-hmm.
How supportive they are about putting people in a nursing home or a memory care facility when the time comes, that is absolutely the right thing to do. And I think that's very important for empowering people to go ahead and make that big change.
Wonderful. I know the book is very enlightening for me, because it covers all aspects of Alzheimer's, like you mentioned, from the caregiving aspects of it. How do you cope with someone within your family or loved ones that's currently experiencing Alzheimer's? And the most touching story that I get from the book comes from the people that actually are able to write their experience right now and sharing that. Because I think a lot of times, I know personally for myself, I'd rather sit there and listen to that person in telling me their own true experience. That's what I got from the book.
Yeah, reading the stories from the people who have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, especially the younger onset people who
mm-hmm.
who were diagnosed in their 30s, 40s, 50s, early 60s. And these are smart, eloquent people, good writers, and they tell you exactly what it feels like. That's very instructive. And I would think that a lot of the people reading the book who are caregivers for someone with Alzheimer's, who maybe is farther along and perhaps wasn't diagnosed until it was later
mm-hmm.
on,
mm-hmm.
it's good for them to understand what their loved one was going through in those early days. What exactly did it feel like? Because these people describe how they have good days and bad days. One woman said that, this was really sad, she said it felt like she was drowning and she could see through the water up to the people above her, but she couldn't reach out to them and grab their mm. hands and come back out of the water. And that was quite an image, really sad. But then there are others who say, look, I'm just going to live in the present. And people who say, I'm going to travel. They basically make an Alzheimer's bucket list. Mm-hmm. So instead of a bucket list for before you die, this is a bucket list for before they're too incapacitated from Alzheimer's. And so they see their friends, they travel, they play golf, they play tennis, they get out there and enjoy themselves. And then they do say in their stories, look, I don't know if I'm going to remember these things, but I'm enjoying doing them right now, and I'm creating happy memories for my family. But, you know, mm-hmm. I wonder, all that traveling, maybe they do retain something of it, because there's a joy from travel or from doing these different mm-hmm. things. And even if you don't remember the details of what you did, maybe you still carry that joy with you.
What it is that it's the experience of being in the present moment. I know you and I have talked about this over and over again in all the shows that we've done over the years. Children live in the present moment. And then as we get older, somehow we get distracted. And in a unique way, this situation that is occurring right now with Alzheimer's and other dementias, it forces all of us, not necessarily just the patients themselves, but ourselves, to be in the present moment, to enjoy that moment, that captured moment.
You know, besides the people with Alzheimer's talking about that, we've also, mm-hmm. we have a number of stories from the children of older parents who have Alzheimer's, and they talk about how they learn to live in the present mm-hmm. from their parents who had Alzheimer's, because they learn to sit on a park bench and just look at the sun on the grass, or listen to the birds, or admire a single flower for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And some of them said that that was a real blessing that came from the Alzheimer's, that they mm-hmm. really did learn how to live in the present, because their parents were stripped of all of those other concerns, and basically
right.
their focus was down to the essential, what's happening right now. Let me enjoy sitting outside. Let me enjoy this meal. Let me enjoy petting this dog, whatever it is. So you're right. There are good lessons in there for all of us about enjoying the present. And, of course, with the threat of Alzheimer's hanging over everyone, mm-hmm. because it's not very much an inherited disease. You can't
right.
necessarily say, oh, well, no one in my family ever had it, so I won't get it. It seems that only a small percentage of the people who get it, get an inherited form of it. And for everyone else, it's pretty random. So it is a good message to enjoy life to the fullest every day, because you don't really know if you'll be one of the millions who are diagnosed with it down the road. I mean, the rate of Alzheimer's seems to be increasing in this country. It's probably just because people are living longer, and therefore mm-hmm. we see more cases of it, because people didn't die from heart attacks or diabetes or from smoking. Reduction in smoking has been probably the single biggest factor that has increased the number of cases of Alzheimer's, right? Because people are living longer because they gave up smoking. So anyway, I think there are a lot of good messages in this book for us about living in the present. I don't know. I think every Chicken Soup for the Soul book helps me to live better. Every single one has a lesson that somehow improves my life and makes me a better person and makes me count my blessings every day.
Yeah, yeah. For me, like what you were talking about, is like every time when I pick up a book, just when I thought I, not necessarily I know it all, but you know, you have some sort of knowledge about certain things, and then when you read books like this in depth, then you realize like, wow, there's a whole lot of things going on out there that you really don't know. And for me, I'm very appreciative of the fact that I have this opportunity to go through this and really absorb it for my sake, and again, in my relationships with other people now that I encounter out there. And it gives me a different feeling, like coming back to what we talk about, the simple example of waiting in line, and then, of course, you see a person that's sort of stumbling around. You have a different reaction this time around. I know certainly
I
will.
Yeah, you see someone in the grocery store just staring at the shelves.
Yeah.
You might go over to the person now and say, can I help you find something? And if you want to be polite and not embarrass them, you could just say, you know, I have my contact lenses in and I can read the labels.
Right,
something
right.
like that. So that
right.
you're not necessarily saying that there's something wrong with them.
Right.
But yes, I think I think that I look around me now with new eyes. And I did that after we did our book on autism. I started viewing children who were misbehaving with new eyes and not glaring at their parents, but thinking, maybe that child is on the autism spectrum and that parent is doing the absolute best job that anyone could do.
Right.
So, yes, this has opened my eyes now to the people with Alzheimer's or other dementias as well.
So true. For those who are listening, I'm telling you, you guys got to go out there and get this book. It's very enlightening about the entire story about Alzheimer's and other dementias. I have selected several stories from the book as talking points for this morning, as usual. So please give us a quick rundown of these stories. I thought they are wonderful stories, and believe me, the stories that I've picked out is just what I would say a smidgen of all the wonderful stories in the book.
Yeah, the first one you picked out, My Mom, the Fighter Pilot, mm-hmm. that was one of my favorite stories also, and I put it number one in the book, and you can rest assured that the number one story in every book is one of my favorites. And I love this one because it's about a theme that runs throughout the book, which is that you need to accept the new reality that your loved one has. You don't go and say, Mom, that's not right. You just say, okay, and you go with it, because what difference does it make? So in this case, the writer of the story talks about her mom who had Alzheimer's, and as the disease progressed, her mom, you know, lost touch more and more with reality. And in her mom's new reality, her mom was a retired fighter pilot from the Air Force. And one of her missions was to rescue all the children from the war. I don't know which war, but a war. Mm-hmm. And her mom would talk about the fact that she had rescued many children, but she hadn't been able to get all of them. And so they had to keep reassuring her that she did the best that she could, and she rescued lots and lots of children, and that's better than rescuing none. And then one day, her mom told her that she got a call from the military that she was going to receive a Medal of Honor for rescuing the children. So Doris, the writer of the story, knew that this was probably going to be her mom's last birthday where she really knew what was going on. And so she bought a medal. Her sister made up a certificate that she printed out, and they presented their mother with the Medal of Honor and the certificate in a restaurant in front of everyone in the restaurant. And everyone in the restaurant clapped and congratulated her mom, and her mom went around kissing everybody and had a wonderful birthday. And the point is, why not? Why not just go wherever your loved one has gone? Because it can't hurt anything, and it makes them happy. And there's no point trying to correct them. There's no point trying to get them to be interested in current events or your kid's soccer game. Let them go where they want to go and just follow them there and spend time with them in that place.
It's a beautiful story because, like you mentioned, we can make it a good spin or a bad spin. The choice is yours. In this case, she chose to go with the good spin and really going on the ride and really engages the mom the best way she knows how, that it's a win-win for everyone.
Exactly. And, and that's the point. And there's just no point arguing with anybody because it won't matter. It doesn't matter if they tell everyone in the nursing home they were a fighter pilot. It doesn't change anything about their care. I saw a movie the other night where basically that was the theme of the whole movie. Does that movie, Nebraska, which got a million nominations. And that whole movie was about an elderly man with some kind of dementia who thought he had won $1 million because he couldn't understand a sweepstake ad that he received. And his son eventually just put him in the car and drove him to Nebraska so he could find out that he didn't win. But that was really the only way that he felt he could deal with it. And I was watching that movie and thinking, boy, this is right on point with this book that I've just made.
Yeah. Accepting a new reality, the section that you just mentioned about the story of my mom, the fighter pilot, the next one that I really like is The Lady in the Mirror by Molly Godsby.
So I hear this a lot, that parents or spouses will look in the mirror, see themselves, and believe that's their friend. And so The Lady in the Mirror is about Molly's mom, who would look in the mirror and see a lady who she thought was a very nice lady, and she would talk to her all the time. And Molly went to visit her one day in the nursing home, and her mom said, "I'm really busy right now. I think I'll stay here and talk." And she just stayed and talked to the lady in the mirror. And she liked the lady in the mirror. So Molly was happy that her mom at least liked the lady in the mirror, since it was her mom's reflection. Mm-hmm. And I hear that all the time. I was talking to somebody the other day who told me that her mom used to look in the mirror and talk to somebody named Mary, which was her own reflection. But she had this built-in friend, and whenever she needed a friend, she would look in the mirror and she would talk to Mary. So again, no reason to argue. Just accept it. Let yourself be introduced to the lady in the mirror and relax about it. So it's kind of nice that there are these ways that somebody with dementia can help themselves by making mm-hmm. new friends. Mm-hmm. So that's what that story was about. It seems to be a pretty common manifestation of the dementia, and that's why we put it in the book.
It's a beautiful story. And again, it comes back to, I'm no medical expert, but I feel like if there's one connection that they could have, it's with themselves.
It is. And it's nice to know that they like themselves when they look at their reflections. And who knows, maybe somewhere deep inside they know it's themselves, but whatever mm-hmm. it is, they're deriving emotional support and friendship from that image in the mirror.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. The next story is from the category of what does it feel like. This is a wonderful story in the sense that it's written by someone who is experiencing Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
and
so this
it's Remember Me, yes. Mm-hmm.
So this is written by Cynthia Guzman. Cynthia Guzman was a nurse for 30 years, and near the end of her career, she began to notice that she was struggling with her daily tasks, and she kept making excuses for it, but eventually she knew that she had to go to a doctor, and so she went to a neurologist, and on her 63rd birthday, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. So that would be considered younger onset Alzheimer's, because she was only 63. She moved into a residential community where she would be cared for, and in this case, she agreed to do it. Her kids didn't have to struggle with the decision. And now she's an early-stage advisor for the Alzheimer's Association, and she goes out and she speaks, and she's an advocate helping to raise money for Alzheimer's research and for all of these support services that the Alzheimer's Association provides. And she says at the end of her story, "As this disease progresses, I won't remember anyone, but I want to live my life so that people will remember me." So that was very touching and very admirable of her. It's amazing how many people with younger onset Alzheimer's will go right to work as volunteers, writing, public speaking, trying to help the Alzheimer's Association. They know it's not going to find a cure for them, but they want to find a cure for the people who are coming up behind them.
It's a life-changing experience, and then you have a choice again. What do you do with it? Are you just going to go down the negative spiral, or are you going to go up in the positive spiral? And in this case, she realized she has so much to give. She took it upon herself and be proactive with everything that she does.
Yeah, and then we had another story from a psychologist who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and he was diagnosed pretty early also, at only age 60. And being a psychologist, he was particularly attuned to what was going on, and so he knew he was having some kind of cognitive problems. And then he got diagnosed, and he talks about this very clinically because he is a trained psychologist, but he says that he's had to learn to depend on his family and his colleagues, and that the disease has humbled him because, you know, he was a hotshot, big psychologist, very well educated, and now he doesn't have the cognitive skills that he used to have. But he's actively advocating for the Alzheimer's community, does a lot of work for the Alzheimer's Association. And he ends his story saying, I intend to be the author of this chapter of my life and actively shape the man I will die as. So it is really wonderful to see these people becoming active volunteers and finding a new purpose in their lives, because most of them do have to give up their existing career because they can't treat patients or whatever with the cognitive disabilities that they're starting to develop. So it's really great that they can use their skills anyway and reach so many additional people.
Again, it comes back to the choices that you make, and Dr. Stephen Hume certainly made the right choice from his standpoint of view, and what can he contribute at his best for the Alzheimer's community.
Yeah, and he's very well loved in the Alzheimer's community. I mean, I hear his name all the time.
That's fantastic. The strategy and tips for coping, it's written very well by Kristen Cusato, The ABCs of Alzheimer's and Dementias for Caregivers.
So Kristen is a really interesting person. She was a newscaster at a station in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And then her mother was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia, which is a form of dementia. It's not Alzheimer's, but the end effect is the same. And she moved back east from San Diego, took a job as a newscaster in Connecticut, cared for her mother, then joined the Alzheimer's Association Connecticut chapter as one of their regional directors, and did a lot of public speaking and writing and working really hard for the Alzheimer's community in Connecticut, which is where I am. And she's the person I saw speaking at the book conference 14 months ago. And she spoke so eloquently that that's when I said, I'm going to make a book. And I started working with her on the book. Then she ended up going back to her newscaster job in San Diego, and that's where she is now. But she just made a half-hour or one-hour show about Alzheimer's, which her station is broadcasting in San Diego. And these ABCs of Alzheimer's and Dementia for Caregivers are based on her years of experience with her mother and then with being part of the Alzheimer's Association. And we're getting a lot of requests already from people to reprint this list. And I'll just give you, you know, a few of them.
Sure.
A is
approach
with a positive attitude from the front. You approach the person from the front with a smile. Always address the person with the disease by name, which is very important because we must honor and respect the person we see in front of us today in order to honor who they used to be. So we must always address them as Mrs. Smith or Mr. Jones, but we have to view them as real people no matter where they are on their journey. Because you don't really know also what they're hearing and what they're understanding. What has struck me is how many people will emerge from their fog when they hear a certain song or at the very end stage, they'll all of a sudden emerge in hospice and greet all of their children by name, even though they didn't seem to know their names for the last 2 years. So we don't really know. The brain is the least understood part of the whole human body. Somehow there are neural connections still being made despite the disease. She said, cue the person. This is her C. Instead of asking, do you want to put on your sweater? Instead, put your own sweater on and then offer to help them put theirs on. She just knows how to approach them in that polite manner. And it's just a wonderful list of different things that you should always keep in mind. She says, for W, walk in the person's shoes. You got to remember that he or she is frustrated by the disease too. And that's something that was brought up in the book, that there is a stage that people go through where they can be angry and frustrated and bitter. Whether they know their diagnosis or not, they do know what they're not able to do anymore.
Right.
And so you have to live through that phase that your loved one is going through. Not everybody does, but some people do go through that phase, and they will eventually get through that phase. And what happens is that there's a crossover point where people don't remember anymore what they don't remember. And then they're a little more at peace with their losses. But while they're still aware of their losses, there can be some problems. And so some people have talked about the fact that it was really hard to get along with somebody for a couple of years, but then everything calmed down again. I guess the point is to not take it personally. It's not your loved one who's angry. It's the disease who's making them that way.
Right. I like L, which stands for love. By the way, she does an excellent job from A all the way to Z.
I know. She nailed it on everyone. The only one she couldn't do was X, so she did exercise with the, you know, a little tiny E before that big X.
Right. And love is what we all need. Give a lot of love. It makes the person feel safe and cared for. That's ultimately what it's all about.
Yeah, because imagine if you were confused and you didn't know what was going on and you didn't know what time it was and you didn't know where you were, you would feel unsafe a lot. So she's right. Making somebody feel safe is critically important.
The next topic and strategies and tips for coping. I like this story simply because it's a challenge for some people. And the title of the story is How I Learned to Lie by Joanna Richardson.
Yeah, so Joanna, she said that, you know, she always thought it was wrong to lie. And she struggled a little bit as she was going through her mother's journey with dementia to accept the fact that she actually needed to lie because it was how she could best care for her mother. So she used to argue with her mother. If her mother said that she stole all her money, was hiding her mail, or bought her rotten food, she would argue back. And then she found out that it was much better to just go into her mother's reality. So when her mother said that she had taken all the good toilet paper and had been substituting the cheap junk, she just said to her mom, "I'll do better next time and buy the good stuff." And then her mom immediately was fine. And when her mom said that all the food was rotten, Joanna just took all the food out of the refrigerator, put it in plastic grocery bags, and said, "I'll go return all of these to the store and get some fresh food." She walked out of the house, waited 10 minutes, came back in with the same bags, and put all the food back in the refrigerator, saying, "I got some really wonderful stuff at the market, so fresh." And her mom accepted that, and she just learned that that's what she had to do. It kept her mother happier. It just made everyone calmer, and it wasn't a sin to lie when it came to things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, she had a great example. I love this. Did you read the example about the remote control for the heating system?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Oh, so her mom, well, this is characteristic of older people anyway. They really like things pretty warm. And her mom would take this remote control for the heating system and crank it up. And there was another remote. So what Joanna did was she took the batteries out of her mom's remote, and then her mom pushed buttons all day long quite happily, and Joanna actually adjusted the system with her own remote. So I thought that was a very good idea.
In some ways, this is sort of that humor side of the situation also, because like I say again, you can either enjoy being in the present moment with your loved one, or you can turn it a different way and be sad and sorry and those kind of things. But I think once you enjoy and accept the situation, then you can have fun at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, there's a fine line between comedy and tragedy. So there's a
lot of stories
in this book which are tragic, but also are kind of funny. I mean, I remember when one of my grandmothers was quite old. I mean, she didn't really have dementia that I could see until she was past 90. But I remember visiting her when she was 91 or 92, and she said to me, "I haven't had anything to eat for 42 years. And she seemed so serious about it, and I almost burst out laughing because it was... She was so serious that I had to leave the room to laugh because, and that's what happens. I mean, you have to sometimes find the humor in these situations.
Right, right. The next category is Next Steps and Tough Choices. This is a survival guide for Alzheimer's caregivers by James McGruger.
Yeah, so James is one of our pretty regular contributors of stories, and I thought his story was terrific. It starts out talking about the whole thing about the good lying, because his dad called him one night and said, "I don't know where I am." And Jim said, "You're at home, Dad, and you're safe." And his dad said, "No, I'm not in my house." Jim told his father to walk outside, look at the number above the front door, which was 911, and said, "See, that's your house." And his dad said, "No, I'm really not in my house. I don't recognize anything here." So Jim got in the car and drove all the way to the other side of town to his dad's house and showed his dad the family pictures on the coffee table. Usually that would work and would reorient his dad, but his dad still knew those that he was in the wrong house. So what Jim did was he put his dad in the car, and he turned on the front porch light so that his dad would be able to see the number over the front door when they returned. He drove the car out of the driveway and made four right turns, made a big square, pulled right back up in front of the house, and said, "Dad, let's look at this house." And his dad looked over the front door, saw 911 over the front door, and said, "Okay, now I'm home." And Jim took him back inside. But he said it was that day that he knew that it was time to move his dad. He couldn't stay in his home anymore. And Jim was lucky. He had five siblings to help him, and they all agreed on what was the right thing to do. And so they did move their dad into a home and took very good care of him there. And so he says, "We consider it a joy to have served our father until his death." And, you know, it worked out really well. I mean, he knew exactly the right time to move his dad.
Well, situations will present itself. So sometimes you don't have to make that tough decision by just thinking about it and trying to formulate a game plan. But in this situation, as you had mentioned, if you pay enough attention to your loved one, the answers will come right up to you.
The problem is sometimes the loved one will resist moving to the memory care unit or the home. I have a friend who had to recently move her husband into a memory care unit, and he thinks that he went there because he needed a massive dose of antibiotics for an infection. She couldn't tell him why he was going there because he didn't know, and he wasn't prepared to accept his diagnosis. So it's tough, but the Alzheimer's Association really strongly supports people's decisions to use those outside facilities, and so the book has a lot of stories that are very supportive of that decision.
Right.
And I'm happy that we were able to do that, because for some people, keeping their loved one at home is the right decision, and for other people, putting their loved one in one of these wonderful care facilities is the right decision. And this book makes it very clear that you make the right decision for your family and your particular loved one.
You have a wonderful story about shopping for nursing homes. I think that's an interesting story simply because it is a tough choice to make.
Yeah, so in this story, she actually started looking for nursing homes way before she was going to need one. And I think that's a really good idea, to acquaint yourself with what's out there so that you're not under duress while you're making the decision, and you're really prepared. And then what this woman, Jean, did with her mom was, one evening when her mom was especially lucid, she sat down with her and told her that she was going to keep her at home as long as possible, but that someday she might have to go into a nursing home. And her mom said, okay. So basically, Jean got permission ahead of time. And that way, she felt that when she did have to move her mom, she had already gotten permission, she had already gotten forgiveness from her mom, and so she could move ahead without feeling guilty about it.
It's preparing way ahead of time, and the most important thing, like you were saying, is that now I've got the permission so I can act on her behalf accordingly.
Yeah. And it was admirable that Jean was so prepared. I mean, it never even occurred to me that you would go and look 2 years ahead of time and choose the right nursing home.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
a great idea.
The next one, which is we talked about earlier in terms of the journey with your parents, taking the journey with your parents, and this is where it's a very tough choice, and we talk about love. This particular article, I really like it very much, Love is the Answer by Nancy King Bonds.
So she, Nancy and her husband took in her husband's mother, and her mother-in-law had lived independently as long as she could, but she finally had to be moved, and her mother-in-law had always loved to cook bacon and eggs every morning, and so first morning in their house, Nancy gets up, cooks bacon and eggs, her mother-in-law comes in, and she looks at her mother-in-law, and her eyes are completely black. Her eyebrows are completely black. She had gotten a hold of a Sharpie or a Marks-A-Lot marker, and now she was permanently covered with black ink. But they didn't say a word about it because the mother-in-law felt that she had put on her makeup for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up having the mother-in-law live with them. Well, it's been almost 2 years already, and things are still going well. So this is a case where they've been able to keep her at home. And there are cases where people say that their loved one is sweet and mm-hmm. mild and doesn't, you know, walk out of the house and walk miles and get lost. And so they're able to keep them at home. But then you have other situations. You know, I know somebody whose husband kept trying to book flights to Washington because he needed to go and deliver an important message to the president. And she finally put him in a facility because she just couldn't keep him at home because he kept trying to leave and you know, get to the airport and take these flights to Washington. So it depends on the person. Some people can stay in you know, their child's home and some can't. So this was an example of one where they were successful at keeping her in their home.
So true. The next one is in the category of in sickness as in health. This is a wonderful, touching story, Living in the Moment by Sue Watkins.
Oh, yeah. This is the one with the husband, Lou. Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. So this, I like this guy because he's the one who kept playing golf, kept traveling. And I was talking about him earlier when I was talking about staying in the present, enjoying the present, and going out and having all of these experiences, knowing that you might not be able to remember them later. And so what I loved about this was that Lou was in his early 70s when he started having temporary loss of memory. And they finally diagnosed him, and he was actually relieved to know what was wrong with him. And they decided to share the diagnosis quite openly with family members and friends. And Lou's friends insisted that he continue playing golf with them, that he continue playing bridge with them, and they continued to travel. So they took cruises, they took road trips, and one afternoon when they were sitting on the bank of a river with their friends, Lou turned to Sue and said, "We are having the best time. I'm sorry I won't be able to remember it." And then Lou raised his can of beer, and she raised her glass of wine, and they toasted to living in the moment. And he's the guy I was talking about before when I said, how do you know that the joy of those experiences doesn't stay with you?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think having an Alzheimer's bucket list is a great idea because you should do all of those things that you've always been meaning to do, and somehow that's got to stay within you, the joy and excitement of those adventures.
Yeah. I mean, whether you have Alzheimer's or not, who cares about yesterday? And tomorrow may never come.
That's true. We all need to live in the moment.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful story. The next one is in the category of The Lighter Side, and this is interesting, From Laughter Through Tears by Hank Mattermore. This is a wonderful story.
So So Hank was a facilitator for a support group for caregivers who were caring for people with Alzheimer's disease. And so he talked about a woman, let's call her Evelyn, whose husband had Alzheimer's, and she was a little embarrassed about sharing her story with the support group. But then she thought, all right, I guess it's okay. I'm with this small group of people. So she said, this is about our sexual relations. Is it okay to talk about it? So Hank said, yes, of course it is. And her husband had been struck with Alzheimer's on the earlier side. And she went on to say that her husband kept forgetting when they had sex. And so she said, the problem is that now his short-term memory is gone, and we'll have sex in the morning, and by lunchtime he forgets that we had sex. And, and she went on to explain that she didn't know what to do. Well, there was just absolute silence in the room, and then someone started to laugh, and then the whole group burst out laughing, and then Evelyn started laughing too. And Hank says, I don't remember if we ever solved Evelyn's problem that day, but I do know that the cloud of depression that had hung over us was gone. So, yeah, got to find the laughter.
And I chose that one because of it being funny.
Yeah.
Again, it's part of that living in the moment kind of thing. And, hey, that's what life is all about. The final story that I thought was very interesting is in the category of making new connections. This is a wonderful story because it comes back again, same within the lines of just enjoy that moment. The story is I Can't Help Falling in Love with You by Laurie Schultz.
So Laurie's dad was diagnosed with younger onset Alzheimer's at only 61. Mm-hmm. And eventually Laurie's mom had to move her dad into a nursing home because he needed help getting in and out of bed, going to the bathroom, eating, walking. These were things that she couldn't handle on her own. So one day at the nursing home, an Elvis impersonator came in, and he started singing and, you know, gyrating that Elvis way in front of the audience. And Laurie's dad looked over at her mom and asked if she would dance. And it brought her father back to life. And this is something that we found over and over again with our stories.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's amazing how often music brought people out of their fog. There was a story that just I thought was amazing about a man who was completely unresponsive in a nursing home, impeccably dressed every day, handsome, older gentleman, again, because you don't know, it's an invisible
mm-hmm.
disease, but never said a word to the staff, although he seemed to understand what they would ask him to do. If they said, get out of your wheelchair, he would get out of his wheelchair. And one day they had music there. This is the story, story 73, Dancing Words.
Mm-hmm.
And the music came on, and this man, Mr. Lyon, immediately stood, turned to his caregiver and said, would you care to dance? She was astonished but said, I'd love to. They walked onto the dance floor, and Mr. Lyon, who had been completely unresponsive, just a lump in a wheelchair, began dancing beautifully. And as he was dancing, he chatted with all of the staff that was sitting around the edges of the dance floor, thanked them for all the things they did for him, said that he was frustrated by his inability to communicate with them. The music ended, and he became unresponsive again. It was like a switch had been thrown. So after that, they realized that somehow the music was creating a neural pathway in his brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started putting on music from the 1940s every time they wanted to talk to Mr. Lyon. And that worked for another 8 months until even that channel of communication shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And other people in the book have talked about how using art was a way of reaching their parents. The brain is so little understood. It's the most mysterious part of the whole human body, the least understood organ that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem that music, dance, art, stuffed animals, dogs and cats, baby dolls all can work to give people a connection that wasn't there a moment ago, and it's a way of reaching through the fog to the person who's in there.
Right. It's a beautiful story, and that section really pretty much tells us that if we try different avenues, there is a channel of communication somewhere that can kind of rekindle something in that person. That's the beauty of that chapter.
That is true. I was very struck by that. And that's why I said before, like, you have to keep talking to the person, keep treating them with the respect, honoring the legacy of who they were, because they're still in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are some of the stories that you like that are powerful stories?
Well, I loved that one that I just mentioned to you.
Yeah.
And trying to think about, I mean, you know, by the time I narrow thousands of stories down to just 100, I really love all the stories.
Mm-hmm.
I guess another one that I really liked a lot mm-hmm. was by Fred Kinzinger.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one where his wife had Alzheimer's, and he was very creative, and he wanted to keep getting through to her and making her life easier. And so when she lost the ability to read, he'd read the menu at a restaurant to her and show her pictures that he carried with him of some food items.
Mm-hmm.
And then when clocks became confusing to her, because clocks are one of the first things that seems to go, the ability to read mm-hmm. an analog clock with the hands, he put up a wall clock where he took off the second hand, took off the minute hand, just had the hour hand, and then he put post-it notes up and said, when the hour hand is facing this post-it note, it's breakfast, this one it's lunch, this one it's dinner, this one it's bedtime, so that she would feel a little more connected to the passage of time, because time is one of the things that becomes difficult
right.
early on. And I loved that as an example of all of the different creative coping strategies that
mm-hmm.
we do have in this book.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. It's a beautiful story. I read that one, and it's just a unique way of, again, communicating with your loved ones. We're coming close to the end of the hour. You have always given us some wonderful words of wisdom. So we're excited to hear what's the recipe for living for this month.
So the recipe for living with Alzheimer's and other dementias, there are five really big themes that mm-hmm. I think come from this Chicken Soup for the Soul book. The first one is join your loved one in his or her own world. Don't fight it. Just go there with them. Second one is join a support group for caregivers. Very, very important. The Alzheimer's Association can tell you where to go. Third thing is be creative with your coping strategies. Think outside the box. You never know what will create that connection or what will make your loved one's life easier. The fourth I have for a recipe for living with Alzheimer's is don't be afraid to take the next step, whether it's taking away the car keys, getting a full-time aide, moving the person into your home or into a care facility. And the fifth recipe for living with Alzheimer's is to use humor as much as possible, because you have to use humor to brighten your days and put all of these things in perspective.
That's very interesting, very, very interesting. Amy, thank you for the wonderful recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please go buy the book. This is an excellent book. You will enjoy it whether you have loved ones who have Alzheimer's or not. This book is very enlightening. So I really encourage all of you to go out and get the book. Thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Pat Morgan. Pat is an expert on homelessness. She received a presidential appointment to the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, a working group of the White House domestic policy under President Bill Clinton. Pat and I will be discussing her latest book, The Concrete Killing Fields, Why We Have So Many People on the Streets. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Amy, it has been a pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.